Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 504. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Or is he? Dun, dun, dun.
Tony joining? Tony morphed into somebody else?
Maybe Tony's been replaced by the pod people?
I don't know. That sounds like an improvement.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute here. What just happened? That did not sound good.
Earl is here too.
And he is the original recipe, just a KFC, though he much prefers Popeyes.
I also prefer Popeyes to KFC. I think I prefer Popeyes in general in terms of fast food chicken. Like, I've had Church's and I've had Bojangles. And I think Popeyes is slightly better than all three of those.
The one thing I will say, and it's not necessarily fast food chicken, but I do have Raising Cane's or whatever it's called, which is more of a southern chicken brand.
Okay. I don't think I've had that one yet.
Yeah, the only time I've ever had it was when I was down in New Orleans. Really good, but the only thing they serve is like chicken fingers. So it's like chicken fingers, or you can get like a chicken finger sandwich.
Do they have a store on Bourbon Street?
I don't know. I don't think they have one on Bourbon Street, but I honestly, I got it elsewhere, so I don't remember. I don't go to Bourbon Street to eat, even though I know.
Right. Nobody does. So. I do remember in a drunken haze ordering some chicken on Bourbon Street, though. And it was, yeah. I remember it being pretty good. But I don't know if that's who you're talking about. So
to be fair, in my experience, ordering anything drunken usually makes it better.
This is true.
So.
Popeye's chicken, decent. How are you guys doing? It's another week of quarantine. Earl, you've gone back to the office, haven't you?
In theory, I did not go at all this week.
theoretically
it exists, but it's been a really hectic week and a half, which is, I would say, ironic considering how much more active I've been on social media. But because of something with other things and stuff like that, which we won't get into, we are essentially now doing 2 months of work in about 2 weeks. So it's been really fun, and I just figured I would save time to just do it all from home, even though it would practically be better at work. And because more people are going in this week to get it done, like our office limit is actually like 4 people, and there's already 2 people in there daily. So I figured I'd just save it and start going in next week or week after, or whenever I'm needed.
Right. Tony, how are you doing? Staying at home again.
I'm at home forever until the end of time, basically. That's what I've decided. I've actually become known in the office for the person who's completely against going back at all. So that's a good thing to have in your reputation. But I also like everything I work on, I can do from home, so it doesn't actually matter. I don't need to be there.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well. It's like I don't want to go back. My department understands that. They know I'm one of the 2 people that are like, no, we don't want to come back into the office.
Well, I mean, it's slightly different tack because, like, you know, office work, that's what we're all doing. But the conversation this week isn't necessarily about office workers. And as parents, you both have kids.
Yeah.
And But like New York City opens up much later than the rest of the state. So for us, like summer vacation just started. So that's like 2 months away before it ends. I didn't realize that a lot of people are now in kind of the midst of like, they have to make that decision because school starts in like 3 or 4 yeah. weeks.
Yeah. DC and Virginia both start in August. Maryland's a little behind, so they don't normally start until later. So their school districts are just beginning the conversations about what they're going to do. But my boss, who lives in Virginia, they're either going to send the kids to school for 2 days a week or do the whole thing online for the whole year.
Yeah. And that seems to be like here in Philly, we don't start until September. Like where my kids go or where my wife works, it won't be till after Labor Day. And that seems to be the conversation as well. Like, are we going to do like a couple of days in school, a couple of days out of school, or is everything just going to be online?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's hard. They can't reopen the schools. Like there's been a bunch of incidents with the camps that have actually opened this summer. Where, you know, there's been some super predator events. Outdoors. They're outdoors. Kids are dirty. They're dirty.
Yeah.
And not just that, but there are faculty too who are going to be spreading this thing. It's not just kids at school. So,
kids don't get as sick. They haven't, but that means that they're most likely to carry it. Nobody's going to know. Go visit grandma and grandpa. And, you know, they go to a home or they go do their thing, and that's how you spread it. And again, you're in confined spaces for 8 hours. It's not like kids aren't going to wear masks for 8 hours. I mean, I don't have, I'm babysitting my nephew. I know they don't have that attention span.
Right. Yeah. And school districts that can't afford like basic classroom supplies for their teachers can't afford to take everyone's temperature every day. They can't afford to test all the kids every day. And those are the kind of things that you need to have in place for kids to go back. Full time.
Are they going to have anything PPE for teachers?
There's absolutely no way they can do it. And some of the idiocy we hear out of like Trump and Davos and the governor of Florida is also way into everybody's going back to school. And they're literally killing people. They're literally in favor of death.
And I think the thing that is hidden that people. It's like it's a chicken and egg scenario. It's the same thing I said when we started. It's the moment school was canceled here, I knew work had to be canceled because parents aren't going to find ways to have their kids taken care of 5 days a week. There's just no feasible economical way that makes sense.
And that's what Trump is kind of banking on with pushing the schools, I think, is if he can get them to reopen, then you can get jobs to reopen.
Right. He somehow thinks that will improve the economy, that make everything better, and then there will be this rosy renaissance of we love Trump into the fall, and he got reelected.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with Hitler coming up with all the crazy battle plans at the end of World War II. Like, I've got all these awesome weapons. We're going to win at the very end, and it's going to be awesome. And he's Hitler. He's Hitler. I'm going to say that out loud.
Yeah. I mean, in our private chat, you had an interesting.
There are a lot of very interesting comparisons you can make between the followers of Hitler and the followers of Trump, who, despite the mountains of evidence that this person is lying, this person is wrong, this person is doing things that are really, really bad, they just follow that person to the bitter end. And as I said in our private chat, I am less concerned about Trump. Like, Trump is going to flame out or die. Like, he's an old man. He's overweight. Everyone thinks he's an imbecile. He'll be gone.
Right.
The problem is his legion of diehard followers who are going to be around for years and feel emboldened by what has happened over the past 4 years and are going to cause all sorts of problems. Not to mention all of the stupid justices that they've appointed over this administration.
Yeah.
Who are going to be in positions for life because.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Though his Supreme Court pick's not working out maybe the way he thought.
Right. Well, the Supreme Court has always been like that, though. They've always been like, okay, this justice is conservative. We're going to throw him in there. And the moment they get on the court, they become something completely else. Because once they're there, they are free. They could do whatever the hell they want. They have a lifetime appointment. They have their salary. Like, they're set for life. It's done at that point.
Yeah, it's funny to hear them complain about Gorsuch, who they like championed as like he reads the law as it's written, and now he's reading the law as it's written, and they're like, well, what the hell? Like, he's reading the law. Like, you
wait,
this is what
half of Oklahoma's an Indian reservation now? What did we do? What happened?
It's like, well, I mean, we signed a treaty.
It says right here it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's really funny to kind of see that, and just like, especially to see Trump just feel like openly like say that he's been betrayed by them. You put this guy in a position of power, and now he's doing what he can with it. So
that's right.
Video games. They are
they're
a thing.
How do you transition from half of Oklahoma is a reservation to video games? I don't know.
That's transition very bad, G-Dan. Just because I thought it was funny. I actually had not seen the video, but it's very indicative of like culture. Twitch put out a video today about doing their part for Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. Apparently, it's a 60 second video that they put up on social media that features, I think, something like three Black creators, content creators, streamers, who has one line of dialogue in this entire thing. And I think somebody did the math. They're featured for, I think, 11 seconds out of a 60-second spot, which is dead. So it's one of those things that you kind of talk about again, where it's like, if people have good intentions, and then look around the room and Roy is like, you can have good intentions, but you're still tone deaf. And right. it is weird, because I've had people I know, who were on Twitter today, on social media today, being like, you know, like, it's so weird that they did this, and then I looked at my own Twitch stream, and I realize like everybody I follow is white, and I'm just like, yeah, because the people who probably get the props, the people who kind of get the recognition, are white. The people who are big names who friend up with other people are gonna befriend other white folks, and they're gonna come on their stream and they're gonna amplify their voices and stuff like that. And it's one of those things. It's one of the very subtle systematic issues is that you kind of go with the people you know. The people you know tend to pick you.
Yep.
I don't utilize Twitch in great capacity. I'm sure that like the only people of color that are on my Twitch feed are Fozzy. But when you guys look at the people you follow and listen to in games journalism, like, I mean, I'm just thinking right now, I can think of two.
Yeah.
Out of everybody that we follow, like it's very bad. it's bad. Like there's a giant lack of diversity.
Yeah, and it's one of, I mean, I think my case is a bit different, partially because I, you know, it's one of those things that I've seeked out, and I have friends who do the same, and they kind of, so there has, even within the last month, there has been stuff like the Spawn on Me podcast, I think, has gotten a lot of big names recently. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, there's different creators, there's different streamers that come up, and you tend to follow them. I had a discussion with one of my best friends today on his podcast, and talking about it's something that's been obvious to me for ages. I think I mentioned this on the show when we had this first discussion.
Yeah.
Growing up, like the only person I knew was N Guy.
Yeah,
and like, even now, like you go to, you know, Easy Allies, you go to Giant Bomb, you go to GameSpot, you go to Game Informer, and you go to Kind of Funny, and you look at their staff page, you look at who's there every day, and you're going to see white faces. I made this point at the start of this year when I was Kind of Funny had a retrospective on the Bad Boys series, and I'm like, oh, this, you know, Bad Boys for Life is coming out, I'm going to check this out. I turn on the video, it's four white dudes talking about this. I'm like, nope. I am not interested in four white dudes. Like, at some point, you're going to have to call a spade, especially if you're talking about something like that. You find one or two Black friends and be like, okay, we're going to talk about Bad Boys. We want this perspective. And it's one of those things that I think people are, it's going to suck for certain sectors of people who are used to getting called or doing the freehand stuff, where you're going to have to start calling people who aren't white for these positions. And you're going to have to reach out to them cold. And it's, but there, you know, there are plenty of people, like if you ask the right people, there are people who are going to give you networks of people they like, whether it's reviewers or content creators or streamers or whatever. There's not a shortage of them, it's just that they don't get the same avenues and the same amplification, and they don't run in the same circles.
Right. And like the ones that I know that run in like those primary circles, the XIGN, the X GameSpot. It's like Austin from Waypoint, and Keita Jackson, who, you know, she's now over at Waypoint. But yeah, like the big sites just don't really, if they have people on staff, they don't, you know, showcase them.
Yeah, and you know, it's not necessarily cognitive, but I think it's something that, again, and because you saw it right after this Black Lives Matter stuff. There were people that they found from Twitter or IGN, like somebody I followed is on the IGN Beyond podcast this week. He was also, and this is one of the other things. This is a bigger problem in the grand scheme of things, long term. It's like they find like three or four voices and they just kind of recycle them over and over again. And I mean, more power to them. But again, like, you can't have one person represent an entire race. So right. You can find it a bunch of different voices. And the other one is like you don't necessarily just want all black male voices either. And you know, like that's a issue with gaming in general, with female presence. So I do think that is, you know, the twofold attack is like, and I want to be cognizant, not just black folks. I know that's a big thing, and I don't want to sound discouraging because it is for my people. But yes, you also need to find Hispanic voices and Asian voices and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's important to have. You need their perspectives to get a full rounded view on everything. Otherwise, we just end off in this closed, weird microcosm that we've created here. So
plus, it just makes things more interesting to have different opinions.
Yeah, like I love the Giant Bomb guys. Like I've listened to them for a decade now. But I really enjoyed like the Beastcast when, you know, they added Abby on. Like it was, she presented a different perspective than, you know, just the dudes that have always been on those shows.
Right. Well, you get in a rut. It's things you would never think about that suddenly you're like, oh, but I know this other thing. And it just makes things just broader and more interesting.
But yeah, I did see some of that Earl where like the top Twitch streamers just are not like there's not a lot of you know black streamers that they showcase. So I should look into finding some people to watch.
Yeah, and I will be honest, my problem is really I just the only people I watch. Like I my Twitch account, I think I follow three people, and it's all in the last week or two. It's just folks who post on Twitter, because I mean, personally speaking, I just don't care much to watch people play video games. It's not my MO.
Yeah. I would rather play them myself.
Yeah, pretty much. Even the ones I'm watching now are games that I've beaten myself. It's just fun to watch somebody else beat them. Or it's like something to have one in the background while you're working or something like that.
That's generally how I utilize. Like I was watching people on Mixer, and that's how I would do it there. Like it was just noise, right? Like out of the corner of your eye or something.
Yeah, I think it would be a great avenue for me to start streaming, but I have nothing to add to streaming. I can't. I am not one of those people who. Has the ability to just, and I say this as somebody on a podcast who knows he dominates most of the conversations, who does not really like to have, who does not constantly have something to say. And I find those people who, like the ones who stream and stuff, really do have that personality that's amped up to 10, who knows how to kind of hold the conversation. Because you're holding a conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
Especially
when you're starting, like it's because no one's watching, right? So you're just talking to yourself. There's not even like a chat really. But you need to be able to have that like almost like a one-man show.
Yeah.
to build up a following through your videos that you've done of these past streams so that then people will join the chat and then it can be more interactive, but you have to be able to have that that solo show mentality.
Yeah, and I guess this is why you pick game. Like, you know, like this is I've seen people offer tricks, I should say. Is you pick a game that you know or a game that you're interested in, not just something that's popular. Like I'm not gonna stream a Fortnite or PUBG because that's not something, well, one, I don't add anything to it, but I really don't know enough about it. But yeah, it's one of those things where like I could talk about, like I've done it with Alpha Protocol. I've talked about that game on my own for half an hour. I could talk about stuff for half an hour.
He did. He did it here for us.
I know. It saddens me. I'd forgotten all about that. Thanks for bringing that back up.
But it's actually something I've tried mostly to work on public speaking, where I will talk about stuff. And it's actually one of the ideas. When I used to test one of my podcasts, I would do a dry run by myself to see, like, okay, do I actually find this engaging to talk about there? But yes, it's one of those things where you need an audience, you need content, and you somehow need to be entertaining enough to bring this whole package together. And that's not always for everybody. And usually the first thing is people get discouraged because they stream two or three times, three people show up, and that's it for them.
Yep. I've been there. I've done that where it's like, all right, I'm streaming this. And people pop in, they pop in for a minute and jump off. It's like they don't utilize the chat. Yeah, it's like, oh, somebody's here watching. That's cool. Hi. And then like immediately drop off.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for nothing. Yeah. Damn you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough to do that. I'm sure there's some news. It is drawing a blank outside of that Fortnite Sony news, where Sony invested $250 million into Epic.
Yeah, I mean, good on them.
Yeah.
Sure.
It is weird, because it's for minority ownership, right? So they don't, like, Epic will remain an independent company.
Yeah, and I mean, Tencent owns a portion of them as well, don't they? Like, if I remember correctly, I think they bought a portion of Epic as well. Epic's just able to stay independent outside of that. But I'm not sure what this gets Sony. Like, we'll see. It's a
maybe nothing. What does Sony need?
Well, it seems like it gets them. Like they are working on a partnership with, they are working on a partnership with them for content, I think is what they says, or something like that. So that's good on them.
Yeah, I mean, I we'll see how popular Fortnite remains going into this next generation. It has lost some of its luster. It's not. I mean, it's still super popular. Like, there's no denying that, but it has definitely dropped off player base wise. If you look at their financials, they are not making as much money from Fortnite as they had been.
Well, I don't blame them. When you're charging $20 for a Captain America outfit,
yeah, that was absurd.
That's a little much.
Yeah, for one outfit.
Well, Captain America's great. I mean, he should be celebrated, but you know, maybe not that much.
No, and it was only for a limited time over the weekend. So my friends, I saw the trailer. I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna get Captain America. They're like $20. It's not even $20. It's like 2,000. V-Bucks or something like that, which is $20, but I'm like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. I'm not that real. I don't even buy the battle pass yet. I'm not spending money on an outfit I'm gonna wear once or twice.
Yeah, that seems absurd. But I'm sure that plenty of people did buy it, so.
Oh, I'm sure.
They run daily. I think it's a daily. It's either daily or like every 36 hours or so, where they change the content in the store. And obviously they're selling shit there. Like, it's not $20 for a skin, but skins are not cheap in that game.
No.
So what have you guys been playing then? Anything new?
I played some Order of Battle World War II.
Anything good?
What do you mean, good? So, Order of Battle World War II is a strategy game where it's like hex based and you're moving tanks and infantry and artillery around. I'm not sure what the scale is supposed to be. Like, it never makes it quite clear whether the units you're commanding are like
100
battalion, like battalions or divisions or whatever.
Right.
But the map scale is like, okay, the city of Oslo is one space. But it's kind of a cool idea. So the game is free to download, and you download that, and you can play through the tutorial campaign, and then which is like a bunch of fake battles that they just made up. And then you can play through the first mission of all of the other campaigns that are available for purchase. And then you can decide based on that, which of the campaigns you want to buy and play.
How much do these campaigns run?
They're actually pretty cheap. So like maybe $8 will get you like a 12 mission campaign, which is going to take you like 30 hours.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, and of course on the Steam sale it was super cheap. It was like $4 for a campaign. So I got like, you know, 5 of them. And they have them bundled too. So if you wanted to get like, all right, the Pacific and World War II, there's like 5 different campaigns that you can buy all bundled together and get them cheaper. Or, you know, Germany and same thing. Russia and the same thing. So that's kind of cool. So I downloaded the game for free. I played through the tutorial campaign. I'm like, I kind of like this. So I picked up a bunch of campaigns and started playing it. So really fun, really good idea. It's from that same vein as like Panzer General, like the classic,
right?
Panzer General. There's the modern descendant of Panzer General, which is called Panzer Corps. That's very similar to that. The one thing they added to the game, though, that wasn't in those other games is logistics. So basically, you need to keep your units with a line of supply to wherever your base happens to be. And the enemies have that same thing, too. They have to have a line of supply. So you can, like, encircle units now and, like... make them run out of supplies, which makes them weaker, which makes them easier to eliminate. So that kind of thing is interesting because you don't normally see that in this scale of a game, this sort of a game, because they're normally like the beer and pretzels, like I'm just going to sit down and blow some stuff up type strategy game.
Right. That is kind of cool. Like you can, you know, set up different strategies by stopping supply lines or disrupting them in some way.
Right. The other thing is you have a core of units that you bring with you from mission to mission through the campaign. And then you can also get linked campaigns. So the Germans have they have a Blitzkrieg campaign, and then there's a Panzerkrieg campaign, and then what they call Endkrieg, because I think they didn't know what to call it. But that basically takes the Germans all the way through the war. So you could actually take your core troops through that whole Blitzkrieg campaign, then export them to the Panzerkrieg campaign and go all the way through that, and then export them again to the Endkrieg and play like the whole war, like advancing your troops and like, you know, making them better.
So there's like a kind of like an experience component where
they get experience over time. It's not like XCOM, like your troops aren't unlocking new abilities and that kind of thing. They just, you know, get better at killing things. So it's there's still like RPG element to it. It's just like your troops become more effective.
Right, which in, you know, in some
in,
games
in real life like makes a, sense, right?
Right, but also in some games, like they just don't like you. Just like here's your troops for this mission, and
right,
go, because they base it off of whatever the real life.
Right. The other interesting thing is you actually buy your core troops. So as you're playing through the game, you'll get points, and you'll earn points by capturing objectives and completing like, they give you like maybe there's a side mission where destroy 20 units or whatever, so you'll earn points, and you can use those points to buy more units, or to upgrade the units you already have. So like you could go from like a Panzer I, which is a really bad tank, to a Panzer IV, which is a much better tank, and that it's the same unit though, so it maintains its experience. You've just upgraded its equipment.
And are you gaining like, if you're not going for these secondary objectives, like, you're still gaining currency to spend.
Yeah, it's just not as much. Right. So there's definitely incentive to go for those secondary objectives. Because the other thing is, those points that you earn are replacements. So as your units fight, they take damage. Every unit has 10 steps, and if they lose all 10, they're destroyed. Well, you know, you don't want your 5-star experience unit to get destroyed, so you want to, like, get replacements, and you also have to use points to, like, build its strength up back again.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's lots of little cool elements. It's very much, though, the beer and pretzels type game. It's not overly complex. It's easy to get into. So it's fun. I like it.
Nice.
Jeff would like it too if he were here.
Yes, definitely seems like a Jeff game to me. Earl, what have you been playing?
I've been playing lots of stuff. The two main ones I want to talk about is, I've mentioned before that I've been playing Dead by Daylight.
Yeah.
So that's the same group of friends decided, because we all had access to it, to try Friday the 13th, which was a PlayStation Plus title ages ago. And it is also an asymmetrical slasher game. The major difference with this is, one, it's 7v1 rather than 4v1 that Dead by Daylight is. And this one is, I will say, overall a less better designed game, in the sense that it really does beg for cooperation. Once people start dying off, it's really hard to kind of get out on your own. The flip side of it is, I find it a much more enjoyable and kind of fast-paced game, because there's so many, like, with Dead by Daylight, your main objective is to repair generators, so that you repair enough generators so that the emergency door is open and you can escape.
Right.
And that's really the only one way to get out. Like, eventually, if there's, like, one or two players left or enough generators are done, a hatch will open. If you have a key, you can open it. If one person's left, it will automatically open. The killer can also close it, but it's just in second avenue that opens up. That's like a last ditch effort near the end of the game, where Friday the 13th has multiple ways to do it. There is a super rare, almost impossible to do way to kill Jason. There is, like, I mean, honestly speaking, there's not like a main way to get out. So the ways that we found popular so far is usually to fix the cars. So if you repair the cars, which means you find gas, you find a battery, and you get the key. You can repair a car, and you can drive out to safety, and you do have to drive out. But it also depends on which car you fix, or if you're fixing the same, because there's usually two cars on the map. One fits two people, one fits four people. Like I said, there's 7 survivors.
Wow.
So somebody gets left behind.
Well, yeah, somebody might get left behind. So
last person kills Jason, obviously. That's what happens.
That's what happened. But yeah, so what happened the first time I played is so we found the two-seater, we got the battery, somebody got the keys. I filled up with gas, somebody hopped in the driver's side, somebody hopped in the passenger side and drives off without me. I was like, I did all this work and somebody's taking my car.
Wonderful.
But the flip side is, Jason can actually stop the car and break it. And I think he didn't break it, but he stopped the car, so he had to run out. So eventually I ran all the way to the end to hop into the car and drive off. So that's one way. The other way to do it is you can call for Tommy Jarvis, who comes in. And if you've seen Friday the 13th movie, Tommy Jarvis is kind of the big protagonist of his little trilogy, which is 4, 5, and 6.
Yep.
And he's like a special character. So he has all of his stats are like 10 across the board and stuff like that. So he shows up. He actually doesn't do anything special as far as like killing Jason, but he comes preloaded with a gun and stuff like that. So, and if you call him, he always shows up after somebody dies or after somebody escapes to kind of rescue people. So it's kind of a nifty little tool for that as well. The other way, which we've not done, is you can call the police. Once you call the police, I think you have to wait something like 5. Oh, you have to fix the phone first. But once you fix the phone, you can call the cops. And once you call the cops, you just have to wait, I think, 5 minutes to show up. And once they get there, all you have to do is run to one of the exits and they will rescue you. And the final way, which is almost impossible, is you have to outlast Jason for 20 minutes. So you will just have to find a way to sneak around without him noticing you for 20 minutes and be golden.
Now, is he faster than you? Like, why can you outrun him, or?
Kind of. He, by default, Jason is slower than you, but Jason gets abilities that that kind of plays into the trope of like a horror slasher villain. So like he will unlock an ability called Morph, for instance, and that is an ability that allows you to kind of zip across the map. He can he can fast travel as well, which players can't do. So he can hop from building to building much faster. But by default, I think the players do run outrun him. But you also have some offensive abilities. Again, you can't really kill him. It's possible. It's super difficult. But you can knock him down with like a pipe or a baseball bat, a machete. Like I said, Tommy Jarvis comes with a gun that would knock him out for a bit. There are ways to distract him. So like you can go into a house and you can turn on a radio. And he might see, like he will see hear the noise and he'll go to that house. And you can buy yourself some time there. You could, you know, you could set up bear traps to trap him. You could set up firecrackers, which for some odd reason distracts him. when he grabs you to kill you, you can also like you can break free of his grip by tapping X. He can also just beat the crap out of you with his machete. But there are ways for you to break free. There are ways for you to survive. As the game goes on, as the match goes on longer, it is harder and harder. Because like for instance, one of the strategies you have. It's like you go to cabins, you search them for equipment and gear and stuff like that. And you can lock the door behind you. If you lock the door behind you, Jason has to break it down, which gives away that he's there. And if it's not locked, it's 3 hits, I think. If it is locked, it's 5. So you have time and you can jump out the window. Jason can't go in.
He can't just open the door.
Well, I mean, you've seen those movies. Come on, you know that.
Yeah, I know.
They never just open the door. They never just run away. It's always super complicated.
But here's the thing. Jason, near the end of the game, gets something called Rage, which means he can then just kind of, he breaks through doors like he would in the movie. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's something that unlocks later on. So like I said, as it gets longer in the game, it becomes harder and harder to actually survive, which again, is kind of the trope of horror movies. It's the longer you go.
So Jason, like as... Like do his abilities unlock at like certain time intervals, or does he have to do certain things to like earn them? Or
it seems like it unlocks over the course.
Okay.
Of the game, so like maybe like every 2 or 3 minutes he'll get something new, there's something like 8 versions of Jason in the game, and each one has something slightly different. There are some Jasons who can run, there are some who can't run, there are some who do well with water, there are some who can't go into water. There are some that come back here with throwing knives. There are some who, you know, like some have a spear, some have a machete, some have shears. You know, you can unlock different versions of the different abilities on ways to kill people. So like right now, Mines has a heart punch. He has a backbreaker. He has a neck snap. So yes, there are a lot of different ways for you to kill people in that game. Give me a second.
That's kind of neat. I like the idea of them giving you different Jasons and focusing on kind of like the way he kills people in the game. That's kind of cool. In the movies.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that the big thing compared to Dead by Daylight is that Jason's also in third person, where with Dead by Daylight, the killer's view is actually first person, so it does limit what they can see. Jason gets to kind of see all around him. So it's harder to sneak around him, but it is easier to kind of evade him because, again, like I had one yesterday where I was being chased for God knows how long. And like the ability to actually morph is hard to control, and I think it's hard to control on purpose because sometimes he'll zoom right past you or he'll stop and then he'll, you know, like you get time. Like you know he's teleporting by you because it gives you like this old VHS look. And so, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that it does, which I think is really nifty. And like I said,
go ahead.
I've been having fun with it. So,
are there different maps? Are there like different layouts for Crystal Lake or?
Yeah. So again, okay. Everything is based off of the movie. So the Crystal Lake has several versions. There's Pinehurst, which I think is the halfway home from 7.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Jarvis house from 4, I believe. Yeah. So yeah, each game, each movie tends to have like an environment. Like I think three, because it's oddly enough not any other ones, but three has the barnyard, which is where the climax takes place. Or I forget if that's three or four. But yeah, so there's something like I think there's six or seven maps in there, and then some of them have like smaller versions, and then some of them have like actual bodies of water. So one of the other options that becomes open in those levels is you can also find a boat to start up with a, I think you just need an engine and gasoline for that one. And once you do the boat, you can drive off. So yeah, it's fun in the varieties of stuff you get to do, which also means that you get to coordinate. I was playing with friends, so it's slightly different. But one of the cool things about it in-game is that if you're playing in-game, instead of just having like an open voice channel, you have either proximity communication, which means that if people are close by to you, you can talk to them, or you can hunt down and find walkie-talkies, which then allows you to talk to people across the map. The positive to that is that you can talk to people across the map without interference. The proximity thing is because anybody near you can hear you talking, it means if Jason's nearby, he can also hear you speak.
Oh,
that's
no.
That's kind of cool.
Yes. So it's one of those
Chris
fun
says
things.
It's cool, but I'm like, no. Let him not hear me.
It's cool from like a horror perspective, right? Like where there's a risk reward in actually communicating. I'm a little disappointed that like they stopped continuing work on that game because the rumor was that they were working on the Grendel, which is the spaceship from Jason X.
Yeah, it seems like, and this is kind of like if you follow the Friday the 13th series at all, it's kind of the big divide because the Friday the 13th series has gone through some legal. It's still, I think, in some case where the original creator believes he owns the rights to Jason, but not necessarily to Friday the 13th, which is how you get stuff like for instance, I own the Friday the 13th franchise on Xbox, but it only has Friday the 13th 1 through 8. And even if you look at the names, it's not Friday the 13th, Jason Goes to Hell. It's Jason Goes to Hell, and it's Jason X. Like they're not, it's not Friday the 13th 10 or something like that.
Right.
And those are the two that are separated from that core franchise. And it's even represented in this game. And the really bad thing about it is like this game has bugs and stuff, but they can't fix it because Ziggy, they can't change anything in the game. So even like when it was ported to the Switch, they had to keep the same exact version that it was on the PS4 and the Xbox One, even though they acknowledge that there are things they would like to fix.
Like there are things that we know are broken, but we are not allowed to change them.
So that's a shame. It's one of those funny historical things. It's also, I believe it was also their first game.
I think so.
So yes. But yeah, I think, again, I don't necessarily know if it's something that, but it was fun for something that I already had on my system and just kind of going through me. Like, there's people who want to play it now. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm down for this.
Now, are you playing with a full crew? Like, is it like eight of you playing or?
No, right now, I think it's like five of us. We tried to actually play with the community yesterday and the servers were down. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeff had it and he was trying to get me to play it and we never were able to hook up. But when I would try to play it, like I would just sit in the lobby forever.
Oh, you see, like, ours was worse because we would get in the lobby, we would ready up, and then the game would crash, and they did it twice. There was one time when we got in the game, we figured out, like, I was a survivor, my friends were survivors. I go into the first cabin, I lock the door behind me, I go to open a drawer, game freezes up. I'm like, did I break something? And then we all got booted, so we just decided we're just going to play and have fun after that.
Fair enough. You play anything else?
Yes. So the other game I wanted to talk about, it was one I wanted to talk about last week. And I don't know if anybody's actually heard of it. Nobody I've mentioned it to, and even when I mention it on Twitter, nobody comes up. It is a game called The Way of the Pacifist. Two words. And it is kind of like a really, really fun take on the old school beat 'em up that its focus is on the combat of of defense. The like the pun is pacifist. So like you don't attack people. Instead, you're blocking or dodging their attacks, and it becomes sort of like a rhythm game. It's like you might have an enemy that attacks three times in a row, but they like one, you know, it might be so fast, or you might have an enemy that's like fast grab, or like this one enemy that's grab strike, and it's like memorizing their patterns, but also getting down the beat of their attacks so that you can dodge and block their attacks. And once you do it enough times, they get tied up, and then you just kind of push them over, and you knock them out. If you maintain a combo, well, you know, if you can also you unlock group attacks. So it has you know minor RPG elements of the character doubles up. So like the first one is like once you do like I think it's like a 8-hit combo, you get a super punch, which takes out most enemies with one hit. There are some enemies it won't, and that's so far is the way that I found that you kind of engage with bosses, because bosses are more blocking and doing that. And then there's another one where you kind of grab people into a stand that there's like a seismic wave that knocks out anybody on the screen. So yeah, it's really great. I'm terrible at it, but I find myself so addicted to it, just going back and being like, I got this. I know I understand their pattern now. And like figuring it out and just like get into the groove where you're just kind of like, you know, the enemy's well enough where like it's like block, dodge. Or figuring like encountering a new enemy and figuring out like, okay, what can I do for this one? Like there was one enemy, and a lot of it is like you meet enemies and then they get an evolve form. So there's enemies that throw stuff at you. Usually, if they throw stuff at you, you can dodge it, grab it, and throw it back at them. But what happened was I found somebody who threw two knives in a row, which meant if I grabbed the first one, I get hit by the second one.
Oh no!
And that kept on confusing me. So what I've learned through trial and error is that you can block the first one and then dodge the second one. So you grab it and throw it back at them. And the good thing is when you throw it back at them, it's a one to kill. Because otherwise it takes forever because they do two attacks, then they'll come up to you up close and hit you, and that's the only time that knocks out their stamina. And then once they're on the screen, there's a lot of other things going on the screen. But yeah, it has a really great 16-bit art style to it. It reminds me of the... Oh crap, I forget the name of that. Wild Guns? I think that's a Super Nintendo game.
Sounds like a name from a Super Nintendo game.
It reminds me of that. But yes, I think it's great. I don't know if it's still on sale. It was on sale for like $1.50 on the Switch. I'm like, for $1.50, I'll try something out. And I've been having a ton of fun with it.
And that was The Way of the Pacifist?
Yes.
Nice. Tony, you play anything else?
Apex Legends. So much Apex Legends. Much Apex Legends.
Did you play Apex Legends?
I did play Apex Legends.
Okay.
That game's really good. You guys should play more of it.
I want to. Is it still you three people?
Or two. Yes.
Or two.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't it has permanent. They haven't had a four person.
Or even like a six-person squad where it's like two teams of three.
It wouldn't surprise me for them to add four people. I don't know if they would do six. I don't know.
Do they have like a big team rumble?
No, that's a little odd, right? Maybe they will at some point. That'd be fun.
I mean, I don't mind because I've been fanning out of Fortnite duos. So I don't mind. It's just like I feel like three is such an odd number for a video game.
It's hard to find three people like all at the same time.
I think four is easier to get because then it's like you're gonna invite another group or something like that, where three's like it's you and your friend and then you have to find like one other person.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like the characters in the game though are balanced for three people.
Sure.
So it's hard when you get like an odd number to like keep that balance. Like some of the characters when you're playing duos are useless. Because their abilities are more like covering the squad or like healing, which is really hard to do when there's only two of you because you need somebody to cover you while that person is healing.
Because right. That the person you're healing is the person that would be covering you, so you're both at risk there.
Yeah, so there are some characters that you'd use in trios and be fine, like. Bangalore is the one, like I've used Bangalore a lot. She drops like this rolling barrage and she drops smoke. But when you're in duos, those abilities are less useful, and she doesn't really have anything else to like bring her forward. Whereas there are other characters who have abilities that are good in any situation, and those are the ones that you kind of want for duos. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have been playing The Last of Us Part 2.
How depressing are you?
I am not depressed by it. I honestly, all right, so the people that are like, oh my god, this is the most like impactful game I've ever played. To be fair, haven't finished it. Maybe it wraps up with some super impactful piece. It's a video game where you kill people. And like, it really, it's like, so the, are you guys going to play it at all? Is there any chance of that?
I will not be playing it, so.
Okay, so spoilers for the premise of The Last of Us Part 2, if you haven't played it.
Plug your ears.
Ahead. Yeah, skip ahead a little bit. It's a revenge tale. Like, at least the whole thing is a revenge tale. But to start with, you play as Ellie, who is the girl that you smuggled, went on that journey with in the first game with Joel. Joel is brutally murdered at the beginning of this, and Ellie's quest is to go find the murderers and kill them. It's a very standard revenge story. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you kill a lot of people. Guess what? You kill a lot of people in Uncharted, and you kill a lot of people in lots of video games. The violence is pretty graphic at points. And this is something Naughty Dog does really well, and it may turn some people's stomachs here. They are masters at filming cinematic action, like especially in like hand-to-hand combat. If you've played Uncharted or The Last of Us, you know that when you get into hand-to-hand combat in those games, they kind of pull in a little bit. They'll focus more on the punching and the dodging. And then when you finally defeat somebody, it's like this dramatic kind of impactful punch, or in this, like, you know, baseball bat or something to the head. But, you know, maybe the first couple times you may be like, oh god, that's pretty graphic. But after you do it 45 times in a row, like, loses its impact. Like,
right.
It's not. And then you kind of approach it, at least I did, like, maybe I'm fucked up in that way, but I approach it like as a video game, because that's the puzzle, the combat scenarios, the combat puzzles are not really that drastically different than what you would do in any other type of game. It's just that, you know, in some cases, the level of violence it shows is dramatic and ramped up a bit. But I'm not like blown away by anything in the story here so far. And I think people are overreacting on both sides of this.
Did you get to the second twist?
What was that?
Did you get to the second twist?
Yeah, so I got to the point where you switch characters. So this game goes on for, it took me about 12 and a half hours. And my understanding is that I am now in the second half of the game. You reach a point in the game where you will switch characters to the person you've been pursuing all this time, and you play from that perspective, which I think is a weird choice. Because if you've played The Last of Us, now spoilers for The Last of Us Part 1, you know that Joel like rescues Ellie from being killed by the Fireflies, who he's brought her there to create a vaccine, which ultimately, you know, dooms humanity because, you know, he was selfish and saved who he looked at as a daughter. What's not talked about any there is that Ellie never had a choice in that matter. Like,
yeah,
the Fireflies never gave Ellie the choice of, hey, can we do the surgery on you? It will kill you, but you will, like, you will go on as a hero for humankind. The Fireflies just make the decision to do the surgery. Now, Joel additionally does not give Ellie a choice in her fate. He just rescues her, as I would assume most parents would. But Ellie has no choice in her fate in The Last of Us Part 1. This actually has a scene where you see Marlene, who is the person that commissions Joel to take Ellie across to Utah in the first game, and the surgeon that is going to do the surgery. And the surgeon happens to be the dad of this person, Abby, who is the ultimate murderer of Joel. And he advocates for doing the surgery. Like, I need to do this because it will save humanity, and it's the only way we're going to get a vaccine. And Marlene, who has been Ellie's kind of surrogate mother, surrogate parent or something, since her mother has died, she's asking the questions like, well, would you do this to your daughter? Like, she doesn't know. She hasn't been given a choice. And, like, she's laying out the argument that you would use to, like, you can't just do this. And, you know, the doctor's like, no, we got to do this. Like, there's no question of let's ask the patient. It's let's just do this. And then, you know, Abby overhears this and she tells her dad, like, you're doing the right thing, Dad. Like, and if it was me, I'd want you to do it. But the difference there is that, Abby, you're telling him that he has, you know, that he can do it. Nobody's asked Ellie still. Like, nobody's asked Ellie if this is good for her, or, you know, if she's okay with it. And so my immediate reaction to Abby and her dad, who ultimately Joel kills in the first game, is fuck those two. Like, I understand Ellie's anger and wanting to go and, you know, somebody kills your parent brutally, and it's a brutal murder. Like, it is, they show it. It is some straight up, you know, torture porn type shit. I would be pretty angry too, especially in this world where violence is the reality. You're constantly fighting. You're fighting against other survivors. You're fighting against those infected. I don't know. And then now they're making me play as Abby, and it's like, all right, look, from a personal point, she doesn't seem like a bad person, but.
Which is the point, I think, that because I've read interviews with them, is to kind of show you that she isn't a bad person. And I guess you're supposed to sympathize with her ultimately, but I do think it is an interesting. Like, I mean, I get their point that revenge is a cycle that needs to be broken because, you know, Joe sure. kills her dad, she kills Joe, or he wants to kill her. Eventually, it's either going to have to be broken, or it's going to be more people dead. Dying. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm not sure that it's working, and the game is long. Like, the Ellie portion of that game is 12 and a half hours long.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that the Abby portion, which I'm now into, is another 10 to 12 hours long. Like, it's a whole other game.
It's a lot of game.
Yeah, and game. I don't know, maybe I'll turn on it at some point and be like, yeah, like, you know, I get what they're going for here, but my initial take on Abby and her dad is kind of like, fuck these two. And I'm now tired of the game. I think it plays much better than previous Naughty Dog games. Also, they give you they should be celebrated for the amount of accessibility options they provide here. You can set this game up to play however you want it. You can have it so that, you know, it kind of like auto aims for you. You can have it set up so that you have to aim everything yourself. You can have it set up where there are like five or six different scales for the AI. Like, they can see you pretty much, like, Like, you need to be near perfect to get through a level stealth-wise. Or you can set it up where basically you're invisible. I have it kind of set in the middle. With it maybe toned down a little, like, toned up for me with the aiming, because I don't particularly enjoy how Naughty Dog's aiming works. So I do have, like, the auto-aim kind of ramped up a little bit for me. And I think in this game that the melee combat is more effective than it was in the first one. So I think it plays much better. You know, they give you those options. Game looks amazing. Like, that's something Naughty Dog does great. Animation wise, it's top notch. I enjoy exploring this world. Like, they've done, like, their artwork is phenomenal. Like, it's, and they give you a reason to want to kind of, you know, search through this decrepit, busted up Seattle. Because, you know, if you go around that corner, you go up these stairs, or you look in this bathroom, you're bound to find something that can help you. So there's always crafting materials. There's always, like, some pills to take, which my wife finds to be hysterical, because Ellie and Abby find just random pills everywhere, and you can take them and get yourself upgrades. Like, oh, you have more strength, or not more strength, but, like, you have more health now, or you can hear better. And my wife's like, it would be like a bunch of, like, antidepressants and birth control pills, like, everywhere. And these people are just randomly taking them out of people's bathrooms, and who knows how long they've been there. Like, just a weird thing that you don't really think of as people who play games. Like, it's just, we'd accept, like, these stupid things. But when somebody who doesn't really play games is, like, watching it and go, well, why are you collecting that? Why are there notes everywhere? Like, there's literally, like, every drawer you open, there's, like, a note that kind of gives you some story bit. Like,
and I'm always a fan of the fact that not only do you find them, but they're usually somehow in perfect order.
Yeah,
because it's like somebody's gone through and ripped the pages out one by one.
Yep.
Like, okay, if I was gonna go through this room, where would I go first?
And if you followed any of the talk about the gameplay as well, there are these safes that you can open, and almost every single time, I finally found one where the combination was, like, you actually had to dig a little bit for it. But normally, it's in the same goddamn room. On a piece of paper, you just got to open the drawer or find the posting on a cork board or something. My wife's like, who leaves their safe combinations around?
To be fair, working in a professional setting, there are a lot of people who have their passwords somewhere near their desk.
Yeah, that's true.
You make a good point.
It's just funny, like, that you're like, you're in this store, and it's like, oh, like, I put some ammunition and stuff in there. And here's the code for it. Like, it's not very secure safe if, like, the code is just sitting out here on a desk. Some of them are cool, though. It's like, there was one that I just found where it was, oh, you know, go find. Like, the code is for the big win that we had. It's like the date of the big win. And so then, like, you're, like, looking around the office or the trailer that you're in. I'm, like, looking at calendars and seeing, and there's, like, a picture of, I don't remember exactly. It was, like, a football team or something. And it had the date, like, underneath it. It's like, oh, like, that this team won the championship that day. So that's the code. Like, some of them are fun like that. It's like, there's a lot of, like, video gamey things in this, and it is sometimes counter to what the game is trying to do tone-wise.
And I think that, you know, I hate it, but I do think it's one of the things that's going to pop up the more and more you try to make games realistic. It's like, when you try to incorporate those game elements, which we accept in other games because it's whatever, but when you're in the real world, it's like, yeah, why would somebody's safe combination be right there and not coded in some fashion?
Right. It's that. It's like, you're trying to do this serious world, but, like, I accept it in Uncharted because Uncharted is Indiana Jones. Like, it's just modern day Indiana Jones. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's a 40s serial. And then here it's like, oh, we're trying to do this serious drama, but also, like, you know, you can do this dumb shit. So yeah, The Last of Us Part Two, I'm hoping to wrap that up, before Ghost of Tsushima comes out. I think that's
got a week.
Yeah. My copy of that won't be arriving until later, because Amazon said no. Like,
Amazon.
You're not getting it on the day of release, which is fine. I mean, I'm not going anywhere.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really it. Like, that's been taking up most of my time for games, so. Anything else going on with you guys?
It's news, but it's not super news. Microsoft announced a date for the Xbox presentation, which is July 23rd. We know that Halo and Fable will be there.
Oh, we know Fable now?
Fable.
Yes.
Okay.
That's acceptable.
And Nintendo
over Fable?
I mean,
I like Fable.
I like it too. It's just funny.
I'm curious to see what it is. Because,
it's a video game.
Well, yes, but Fable has taken, I think, 3 tracks now. Because there's the multiplayer Fables, there's the core Fables, and there was another one, wasn't there?
There was Kinect Fable.
Okay, so it won't be Kinect. And then, it's not going to be anything major, I guess. Nintendo has their first Treehouse Live tomorrow, which will cover Paper Mario the Origami King, and it will have a new game from Way Forward, which is not a Nintendo title because they put out a tweet that was worded correctly, I guess, but people suspected that Way Forward might be working. But it seems like they are working on a third-party IP. We just don't know what it is. So we'll have that for next week. And
so Forward is making a new game on their own. They're not making Metroid.
No, but an existing IP.
Okay. Maybe they finally got that DuckTales license worked out.
Woo!
Am I what?
They did that remake of, I think they did the remake of DuckTales. And
can't help myself.
No. I mean, when you hear it, like, the theme song just instantly pops in your head. So,
mm-hmm.
But they had started working on a pitch for a new DuckTales game back when they did that. Just they couldn't work out the details with Disney. So that would be neat. And I hear that that new DuckTales is actually very good. So I've only seen a couple episodes. What I've heard is it's a good new version of DuckTales.
Oh yeah, I enjoy it. I think it's a ton of fun. In many ways, I actually think it's a much better show than the original, because it's actually more serialized now, and it tells a story, and each character has a distinct personality. Huey and Dewey are distinct characters with distinct. They're not just three interchangeable cousins. They dress differently.
Right.
Yeah. And then like Rubber Gill has a personality. She shows up. She's more of a bigger part of the group. Donald's around. It never made any sense that Donald just dropped his kids off with Scrooge and the aft. Even though I guess he's not their kid. It's not their kids either. It's actually Donald's sister's kids because it's their uncle Donald.
Right.
But yeah, that's explained. Their mother's explained. Season 2 has an alien invasion that kind of explains. Yeah, so it's very good.
I should sit down and watch that.
I believe it's on Disney Plus, and I believe now, because I think when it first launched, they messed up the episode order. So
look up the proper episode order.
Well, I think they have it correct now. I hope.
Okay.
How does this kind of thing happen?
I don't know.
Didn't it happen to Firefly? Wasn't that like the original?
Well, Fox aired Firefly out of order. They preferred, so I think it was called The Train Job, was the show, the episode they ran as the first one, but that really wasn't the pilot.
The thing I don't get, which I'm always fascinated by, is that this practice still goes on now. There are still TV shows where I think part of it is sometimes, especially with comedies, is that they find episodes later in the season where they're like, okay, this is funnier, so it might be easier to get an audience. So to air that, and then they never fix it for home release. Because Happy Ending is a show I love that has the same issue, and it's up on Hulu. And the episode order is based off of the aired order and not the order of the production.
Yeah, it's so weird. So is that all we know about for Nintendo? Is,
well, it's because it's not a Nintendo Direct. The Treehouse is usually the stuff that happened at the E3 where they would go in depth with games, and this one is focused on Origami King because that game is out next week, yeah. And we only just got previews today, so they need to assange people's fears, which I don't think they're going to do.
Because, oh no, maybe I should cancel my pre-order.
No. Well, what are you expecting from the game?
Nothing. I got it for my kids.
Oh, then they might enjoy it. Because the big, I mean, the big thing with the last few Paper Mario games, which people have complained about, is that because it's not an RPG system anymore, it's that you do battles and stuff that doesn't really matter because you're not getting experience. And the thing you use to battle is an exhaustive resource that you only get to battle people in. So it's kind of like, what's the point of battling if I'm just going to get stickers or whatever to battle with that I'm going to use to battle again?
Does that make sense?
I get the problem with it, and I think there are ways to fix it without making it an RPG. I just think Nintendo has never really done that. I think they got better with Color Splash than they did with Sticker Star. And this one looks like it has improvements, and it has ways that the battle system is more complex. But again, I guess ultimately the big problem is, what's the point of the battles? It went from an RPG to an adventure game. But it went from an adventure game that was like, we still don't know what to do with enemies, so we're just going to throw them in these battle systems. Where the crust of the franchise has moved to solving environmental puzzles with using the paper gimmick, or I guess in this case, the origami gimmick.
Are reviews out for that now? Or
no, just previews. Reviews should be out next week, I guess.
All right. It sounds like something your kids might like, Tony.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's colorful. It's a great game. Good music. From what I've seen, there's going to be a ton of funny moments. I think the Paper Mario games have always excelled at bringing humor to the Mario franchise. And they're young enough. They don't know what they're missing because they never played Paper Mario
or the Thousand Year
Door. So to them, this will be the best Paper Mario ever. And
right,
theoretically the worst, sure. But
also that.
Yeah. It's the Thousand Year Door. Is that the one on GameCube?
Yes.
Okay. And then Paper Mario was on N64.
Yep.
Okay. Just trying to get it all straight. And any other news going on? Nothing really jumped out at me as like super important this week.
The only other thing, I guess, and we can't really talk about, I mean, we can, because it doesn't make any sense, though, is that Sony revealed a mock-up of the PlayStation 5 case.
Yeah.
Which I don't care for much.
I don't like that big white strip across the top.
Which I wouldn't mind if the case wasn't blue and it doesn't really work with the aesthetic.
Yeah, the case, like the plastic for the case looks exactly like the PS4 cases. It's just they've now added like a white strip instead. Was it it was blue on the PS4 ones, right?
I think so. I mean the flip side to that, it's the same thing I say with the cases. I mean, the same thing I say with the consoles. It's like I don't look at them that often to care, so.
And I don't even have that many, you know, I don't buy physical as much anymore now anyway, so I don't think it'll be a big impact for me.
Yeah, so
Yeah, there was that, and I thought there was something. Oh, yeah. So you said the Microsoft thing is the 23rd. I've heard like people like going, oh, I wonder if they're going to give, you know, date and price on that. I'm going to go with no.
No, I'm not going
to. For that. Because they're supposed to release, they're supposed to announce that other, the Series S sometime in August. Oh. It would make sense to do it then.
Yeah, I also think both of them are going to play chicken and do it as much as possible, as close to the release date as possible.
They don't want to be first. Nobody wants to be first.
There was a poll I saw on Twitter. It's when will we hear about the pricing for next gen consoles? And it was like July, August, September, after they've released.
It's super frustrating because I really just want to pre-order it now. I don't really care what it costs.
But you should.
I mean, like if it's like $1,000, okay, that gives me pause. Right. But you know, it's like $500, $600, okay, that's kind of
our money bags over here, Tony.
I mean, but it's, you know, you have months to save up the money. So like, yeah. I just want to know how much I need to save up, right?
That's fair. But Tony does have a job, and we have known about this for. We've known that new systems are coming this year, so yes. You know, some of us, and you know, those of us that are inclined to jump on early adoption have been
budgeting. I already have some funds socked away. I just like to know how much more I need to sock away.
Yeah, I was about to say, for people like us, I would say, especially myself, this is the perfect year to buy a console. I still work full-time. Almost all of my expenses are gone outside of bills.
This is true.
I have nothing but excessive money in the problem. Right. So.
Yeah, all that money I spent on lunches at work, it's all in my pocket right now. It's just sitting there.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we are entering week 16 next week. If you do 5 days a week... I'd say even if you did like 3 or 4 days a week and you spent like $10 on them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot. You have a new system.
It's so much money. And like even dinner, like having time to like sit and actually cook as opposed to like, all right, I guess I'll, because something happened or whatever, and which happens like a couple times a week. You're like, okay, I better go pick something up. Well, now nothing happens. Nothing is happening. So yeah. I have time to cook every day, and you know, cooking is not that expensive.
No, and the good thing is, like, because like, I think the thing with cooking that a lot of people miss out on is like once you kind of cook, a lot of stuff just gets recycled over and over again. Like you might have to reuse, like you might have to buy new chicken or new meat or new, but like a lot of the sauces, a lot of the spices.
Once you get through that bar to entry, like the spices, like. The weird stuff like the oil, like sesame oil and Marsala wine and that kind of stuff that you probably don't have lying around. But once you buy it once, it's sitting around for, you know, years.
Yeah. and I will be honest with you. There are times this week where I'm just like, oh, I want to order something in. And I'll just go look at my fridge or my freezer. I'm like, oh, you know, I could just take this and this and call it a day. And it's like, yeah, that's dinner. And it's like money I didn't have to spend. Or that money I spent like weeks ago, forgot about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this now. It works. I will say that.
The other thing is that when you have time to cook, you have time, you make leftovers. And now your lunches are set. So everything is cheaper. So, you know, I made chicken parm last night. Well, guess what I had for lunch today? Chicken parm, because there was so much of it.
Yeah, but now you can make a chicken parm sandwich.
Exactly. Exactly. You can have chicken parm in different forms.
Yeah. And I mean, and I'm sure this is for this, all of us. Like my alcohol budget just went down. Like I mean, I'm still like I'll buy stuff because I still am a snotty brat. Mm-hmm. Like I spent like $60 on craft beer like 2 weeks ago, but the $60 gets me. I think it got me something like 30 beers.
Yeah,
which if I go
weeks.
Out,
yeah.
If I went out, that would be like maybe 5 or 6 drinks in New York City.
Yep.
Right. Like, yeah. If I go out, I have 4 or 5 drinks, and I'm like, oh. $90.
Yep. That's where it's like, so we'll go over, like, I actually live very close to one of the casinos here in PA. It's like, you know, hey, let's run over there. Like, not to gamble, but they have like decent restaurants in the casino, and it ends up costing you like $100 or so just to have a few drinks and get like something to eat. And I've not done that in 4 months.
I will say, going out to eat is not that expensive if you don't order alcohol.
No,
I cannot stop myself from ordering alcohol. It will never happen.
Yep.
I'll sit down. I will pick the restaurant based on the beers that are served. So then I end up, you know, spending.
Yeah.
You spend like $120 for the meal, and you're like, oh, it was $40 for the food and $80 for the alcohol. Oops. My bad.
I'm not that crazy yet. I will drink what they have, but it will be like what looks interesting. Like if you all you have, I will be honest. There are bars I've gone to where it's just like, okay, we have a Coors, but I'm like, we got to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I will do that too.
But I never. Okay, there are some bars I've gone to specifically because it's like a craft brewery or like they rotate their taps often enough. Sure, I've done that, but I've never been like, okay, I'm going to sit ahead of time and pick out a bar based off of what they have on tap this week.
Right. I mean, I may or may not have decided where I wanted to move based on the fact that there's a brewery across the street. So,
I mean, I'm assuming it's a brewery like.
It is. They have very, very. They have an awesome, awesome rye IPA. They have a really, really good hazy, and they like. I like all of their beers, but those two are like their flagship beers, and they have them all the time, and they're delicious.
Yes. So, yes, us working from home has saved us money. So,
so much money.
Yeah.
And really, I was talking to my company's CFO, and they're like, "Yeah, we're saving money too because nobody's traveling. There's no like food budget. We're not having any kind of meals or anything."
Oh yeah, there are ways to save money. That yeah. I mean, like us for. I mean, for instance, I mean, I assume the same thing with you, but I mentioned this before, the library system, we aren't running 60 buildings. We don't have to keep the lights on. We don't have to keep the gas. So like, we're saving a crap ton of money. Like that was, I mean, you know, God willing, that was how we ended up having to be able to not cut anybody this year. Because like all the money we saved from not opening the buildings was like the money we had to cut. It's like, it worked out. But yes,
oh man, we never brought this up either. Commuting costs, like not having to pay for like the metro right now is saving me a good like $10 a day.
I mean, honestly speaking, not having to commute to work buys me a system. I'm saving $127 a month. over 4 months now is close to it's more than $500.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so, I drive to work. It's not, I don't drive very far, but it still costs me, you know, $30-$40 in gas a week. And I haven't gone to the gas station like a month and a half.
You're like, I can't remember where it is. Where did it go? Right. I don't know. It's
so far away. yeah. So, I mean, yes, there are people that are, not in as good position as we are, and yes. that's sad, but for those that
is it sad we just talked about how amazing it is for us.
Yes, I mean it's sad for them. Like I am sad that, like, you know, we have not found a way to support these people, but for us, we like, this has not been a terrible thing, and it's a good year to launch a console because we have the extra cash.
That's right.
We're bad people.
Yeah, we're horrible. All this stuff's going on, and we're like, hey, look how good it is for us. Awesome. We are bad. We are very, very bad. Don't listen to us. We suck.
Listen, I tried to stand up for all of you other people out there without jobs who can't afford a $500 system, but I guess we don't care about peasants on this show. Right.
But remember, Earl is not among you. He may try to speak for you, but he's not one of you.
I am just like you. I put on my pants one leg at a time. I get my paychecks every.
I can't
other
remember week. The last time I put on pants. It's been a while.
I've put on. I've transitioned to shorts.
Yes, it's summer now. It's no longer pants season.
I have no AC at my apartment, so I am.
Oh.
Yeah, so like, even for the pictures I take for Twitter, I will be honest with you. I get dressed, I take the picture, and like within like half an hour, I take off the shirt. I'm like, I can't do this all day.
Now, have you considered buying a window unit?
I have, but like my big issue has always been like, where do I start in the?
Right, but you're stuck at home all the time now, so you're gonna have to, like, you're gonna need it for like the next couple months, and it will make your life so much better. And
yeah. I thought about that, and I because there's also like they have like the tiny portable ones, that I might get. That it's like, okay, that I can probably like squeeze in a closet or something. We'll see.
I will say, I was walking through the lobby of my building today. Okay, we all have central air, right? We have. Like, it's luxury apartment, right? So everything has everything. Someone had bought two air conditioners for their windows. I'm like, why do you need these? What are these for?
That seems excessive if you have central air.
Yes.
It's like, I need really cold.
Right. I hope they were for someone else who doesn't live in this building, because I don't know why you're buying central air or buying window air conditioners for that. Makes no sense.
We'll be back next week. Jeff has told us he will rejoin us. He was too busy watching a movie.
He was socially distancing from us.
Yes.
It happened.
But he did say that next week he will have Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2. I will have some of that as well. I'm sure Earl and Tony will have something. And there's the Ubisoft presentation next week too, right? Yes,
and the one we didn't talk about, because I don't think it was announcements of a ton of new games, was Devolver Digital had one today. Or this week or something like that.
Yeah, so we'll look over that, and anything pops up, we'll bring that back next week as well. Okay. So stay safe out there. Wear a mask. Don't go to any crazy parties. And Earl, say goodnight.
Good night. Okay.
So smooth.